Hi, I'm Scott Simme, and I'm the senior editor of DroneDJ.com. I write stories and review products, but one of the favorite things for me is to speak with people who are doing really cool things in the drone business. So we have decided to create The Buzz, a semi-regular podcast where we get a chance to explore things in greater depth. Today's guest, he runs Drone Boy, one of the leading aerial cinematography companies in North America. We'll talk to him about his company, his rigs, and we'll ask for some tips to make you a better pilot and cinematographer. So, welcome. I'm joined today by Tom Comet, who is the chief pilot and founder of Drone Boy Cinema, located in Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here today.
Really appreciate it. Listen, tell us the basics about Drone Boy Cinema. What does the company do?
Basically, we started almost a decade ago, got into drones when a lot of other people were sort of discovering this stuff as well. Started at the beginning, or sort of the beginning of when it became a big thing, you know, with the DJI Phantom. I have always been an early adopter. So that was on my radar, like right away when I started seeing that technology, something that could fly in the sky and basically be an eye in the sky in 3D space, controllable, amazing. I latched onto that right away. You know, ordered one as soon as it became available, flew it around, crashed it almost immediately like everyone else, bought another one, fixed it, you know, just got into it. And then quite quickly, there were so many of them sort of here at the house that I had to justify it. I had a photography background. Like I've taken photos my whole life, never in a professional manner, but always had a camera at hand, you know, right from back when I was a mountaineer in my youth, you know, back in BC growing up to, you know, right through my whole life, always taking photos, always traveling, always adventuring. And the drone and the ability to strap a camera sensor to an object that could fly anywhere in 3D space just seemed like pure magic to me immediately. Like I didn't even question the fact that this was going to be huge and really exciting. And then after that, it was just a matter of trying to spin a business out of that. And I've always been pretty good at, I've spent most of my life creating niche businesses in strange little markets like drones, or strange big markets now like drones. And one thing led to another, and now we're on set. You know, well, this is a little bit of a stranger year with COVID-19, but you know, we're in the union, we're on set, we're shooting, you know, everything from Handmaid's Tale to Star Trek to, you know, XXX with Vin Diesel, and flying drones that aren't little DJI Phantoms anymore, but, you know, gigantic monster machines with $150,000 camera payloads and all that kind of fun stuff. So it's really, it's like many things in life for me anyway, it's been evolutionary. Started out as almost a whim and a passion, and it's developed into something much more than I could have ever imagined. But I had the faith. I knew that it was worthwhile, and I didn't even care. It was just fun. It wasn't like I saw it and I said, I can make a lot of money from this. It was like, this is something that I just have to be a part of because it's so fun. And that's all happening again right now. We're sort of, if anything, COVID-19 has sort of allowed me to re-embrace drones and the technology, and having all that time off this summer, more time off than normal in the summer, and then being on it's the beginning for cinema of this FPV craze. We've just been flying and filming and building, and it's almost like the old days again, you know, putting this stuff together and just having a lot of fun with it.
It's interesting when you brought up the FPV, is that we've seen, you know, some changes both in technology over the years that you've been involved with drones, but also in terms of stylistically what directors and other people might be looking for. Can you touch on this whole push toward FPV, especially for people who might not understand why this would be an appealing new area of aerial cinematography?
Yeah, no, sure. It's for me, I find it really awesome that it's kind of come full circle. Like I said, referencing back to the DJI Phantom, where it started for me and a lot of other people, you know, when that came out, there was no gimbal. There was no stabilized head that could keep the camera fluid in motion. We were strapping a GoPro Hero 3 or 2 or whatever it was at that point, you know, sticking it right on a Phantom. So when the drone pitch rolled or yawed or got buffeted by wind or anything, you saw that in the footage. And the footage was in some ways more real back then. You were actually flying. It wasn't stabilized. It wasn't velvet. Oops, sorry, we got cats and they're having a little fight back there. It wasn't stabilized and velvety smooth like it has been in recent years, which kind of made it so you had to be a better pilot. You had to really anticipate where you wanted the drone a little bit more. So there was certainly no dual operator like we have now. All our big machines now is, you know, we have a camera operator and we have a gimbal operator and we have a pilot. So yeah, back then it was what it was. It was real. The drone rolls, the camera rolls with it. So it's in some ways a little bit more like real flight. Quite quickly after that time frame, the gimbal came along. DJI, you know, came along with the gimbal. I think FreeFly were the first people to develop the gimbal systems for the equipment, but then DJI latched onto that and really made it popular. And that enabled stabilized images in the air. So, you know, the drone gets hit by a little bit of wind, the camera stays straight, the horizon stays level, or, you know, the drone can be moving one way, the camera can be panning the other way. You can do some reverse moves. You can point the camera anywhere you want all of a sudden and fly the drone anywhere you want. You have two different objects moving and working together in perfect symbiosis, which, that's kind of the point when film and TV really latched on to drones, because for them, they could relate to that. It was like having a tripod in the sky that you can point anywhere, but you can also move it. So it's a tripod that's also a 3D, you know, dolly that you can move anywhere in the sky. And they loved that because, you know, at that point, everything was smooth, stabilized, perfect. You could get the perfect frame for stuff. And that's the way film was. Film was locked off. It had to be perfect. Everybody wanted the perfect frame for things. Since then, even conventional film and TV has really changed. Like, we've seen it go from that world to now, shaky cam is kind of the thing. Handheld is kind of the thing. People are sticking cameras on their shoulders. They're running with cameras. And that's the look, you know, that it sort of developed into more. Like, we're on set now. You know, the cameras are still locked off some of the time, and they're on gimbals a lot of the time. And then some of the time, they're just handheld, and they're just that's the look. And it depends on the show, and that's kind of reflected back in drones. So, you know, we went way down the garden path of stabilized cameras and then beautiful cinematic, you know, perfectly fluid, velvety smooth shots to evolution. They want something else. It's always got to change and develop. And ironically, on the drone side, it's kind of gone back to the beginning. So now what we're being asked to do some of the time, and more often than not now, is called FPV, first person view, which is a way of describing really race drone technology. The race drones came on the scene three years ago in North America, 5 years ago in Australia-ish. And that is, you know, these little tiny drones that hobbyists are building. They're bomb-proof, you know, they buy their own circuit boards, they solder, you know, you have your ESCs, you have your flight controller, you use Betaflight, you flash your own configuration files to it, you tweak stuff up, you have your, you know, some of people are literally CNCing their own frames out of carbon fiber, 3D printing components. What's happened since then is ironically, with the FPV stuff, we've kind of gone back to a new version of the old days with drones, where we're building our own stuff, we're tinkering, we're getting in under the hood, we're literally, you know, building frames out of carbon fiber, CNCing frames, or buying pre-bought frames, buying our own motors, buying our own ESC boards, buying our own flight controllers, soldering it all together, flashing it all with Betaflight and tweaking the configuration files till it flies like I want. And these things are little, you know, these things are, you know, 10 inches in diameter kind of thing. Some of them are little, some of them are big, some of them are even smaller than that. And strapping a GoPro to it, and then there's a little FPV camera, so first person view. And the way you fly these things, I think it started because they were so darn small, you couldn't really look at it and fly it and pilot it because it's so small. It's hard to, once you're, you know, 200 feet away, I don't know if it's facing forward or backward or upside down or what. And that's the other thing too, is there's no inherent stabilization built into it, or there's different levels of it, but it's not like flying a new version DJI product where you let go of the sticks and it levels out. If your controller runs out of batteries, it flies home and lands. These things aren't like that at all. They, you know, you push the stick forward, it goes forward. If you let go of it, it's going to keep going forward until it, you know, crashes into the ground or something else happens. The only way you can fly these things is with the goggles. So you strap goggles on and you're seeing what the drone sees in real time. And the latency is so low, the quickness that you're seeing that image from the what's being recorded up in the air, or what's being captured up in the air, to what you're seeing here is fast enough that you can actually fly the thing real time from that goggle perspective. So that's what FPV or first person view enables. And that's what enabled race drones. So race drones really latched onto that technology, that ability. People really got into it. I didn't really get into it back then because it was like, well, we were so busy doing conventional drone stuff that it was like, well, I could see that it was a mammoth amount of time to do it. And I could see that it would probably help, you know, skills and it would be fun, but I didn't really see how it was going to slot into the professional side of things. So I sort of put it away. You know, I checked it out, did it a little bit, but it was like, I just don't have those 10,000 hours to get good at another thing at this point in my life. Until recently, when we started seeing it cropping up in cinema. So now all of a sudden, you know, people are wanting that style of shot again. The GoPros have gotten good enough, you know, the GoPro Hero 8. You can shoot 60 frames per second, 4K, beautiful imagery off a tiny little camera. It's the people that make the decisions for the commercial houses and the film production companies are willing to accept a variety of formats again now. It's not like everything has to be shot on an Arri or a Red, or, you know, they're willing to accept the trade-off of getting something that's really original and unique a perspective for, you know, a little less camera quality and you know, bit depth than they're used to. So it's just ironic that we're really going back to the start, but with this new version of the technology and doing it. And now FPV has just gone crazy, and it's like we're working on it all the time. Every day we're flying, we're building new machines. We've got little ones, we've got medium ones, we're working on some big ones, which is scary because it's fast and it's furious and it's, you're right in there, and it's sort of like starting again with this stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
It's funny you mentioned that, excuse me, about the size, because I think most people in their mind, if they're familiar with FPV and you start talking about cinematography, they're thinking, oh, well, they're flying like a CineWhoop or a TinyWhoop or something that's smaller. But the trend lately, and I've seen some on your own demo reel, is to put very expensive, larger cameras on FPV. And when you said, you know, it's a little bit frightening, well, it scares the crap out of me when I see these videos, just because these cameras are so expensive. You know, can you tell me what that was like the first time you guys decided we're going to mount a big, expensive, heavy camera and we're going to fly this thing FPV?
Yeah, no, it's terrifying. It's really like going back again to the old days when we were building stuff, and drones have come a long way. I mean, when we used to go out and fly stuff, I mean, the first big crash I had was a Canon 5D in the field here next to my home where we do our training and flying. And I remember, you know, the drone just fell out of the sky and smashed itself into little pieces. And I mean, at that point, a Canon 5D was sort of the most, you know, amazing sensor I owned anyway. And it was just absolutely devastating. It was this, you know, 6-rotor machine that I built myself. But it was rock solid. It flew, it was perfect. And then one day it just, for no apparent reason, fell out of the sky. And we used to see that all the time back in the old days with drones. And, you know, thankfully with the stuff, the technology where it is now, we don't see that. You're back in the FPV world, you're building the stuff, you're putting, not necessarily, it's like building your own computer as opposed to buying a Mac. You buy a Mac and it's this, a Mac is like a DJI product. It's perfect. It works for the most part. It's slick. It's gorgeous. It's the quality of that comes out of it is amazing. You build your own PC, you can save a lot of money. You can build something that's potentially more powerful, more awesome, but you know, something might blow up in the process if you, you know, you bought the power supply that wasn't right for the motherboard and yada yada. It's kind of like that with the FPV stuff. So, you know, there, again, we're back to that learning curve and figuring it out. So we've spent, me and my company, we've spent the last 2 years working pretty hard at it, and we're bringing other people in who have been in it for 4 or 5 years and longer, actually. David's been in it a lot longer, who know this stuff through and through, and we're pulling in their information and their knowledge and their ability to help us build and fly sometimes so we can get these products that are, you know, as nimble as a small FPV drone that's off the shelf and as reliable as some of our, you know, other products in other markets. Because it's, you know, we're on set with, you know, super famous people with very expensive cameras in sometimes very urban locations, maybe downtown. Our stuff has to work. It has to just work and work and work. It can't not work. So that's really important, because even with a little FPV drone, safety is paramount. Like, people sort of take these things for granted with these, you know, it's just a little, you know, 5-inch propeller, or like on a Tiny Whoop, a 3-inch propeller that's ducted. Man, those things can cause some damage if they're put in the wrong context and then something bad happens. So it's, you know, we still have to have that same level of safety and control and, you know, procedures with these little things. And that's actually been one of the harder things to convince, you know, maybe the film community and some of the commercial work that we do, that, yeah, we're bringing a drone this big sometimes, and we still need to have a 3-person team on set in order to implement that properly. And they're like, well, why do you need 3 people? You know, you have a pilot, he's wearing the goggles, we can just fly it, whatever, it's no big deal. It's like, no, we need to have spotters, we need to have someone who's just managing the camera, and then he becomes a spotter too when the thing's flying, and it's, we're all on comms, and we've got a safety plan in place, and it's just as hard, if not harder. We're having to sort of relearn how to do all this stuff in a new context. Because before, you know, you show up with a drone that's, you know, 5 or 6 feet across, people treat you pretty, it's serious. Everyone's like, whoa, that thing's serious. It goes up, whoop, 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 and papers and stuff start flying. People are like, wow, that's, I'm going to go stand inside, which is a good idea. With the little machines, people are like, oh, whatever, you know, and it's, you know, they have to be treated with respect like the big ones as well. But anyway, it's a lot of fun, and it was kind of good timing with COVID. I mean, we literally flew and flew and flew. I mean, we had quite a bit of work this summer too, but it was a great time to just re-embrace drones. And we'd have little get-togethers at the, like, we have a flying field here at our facility, which is quite lucky. You know, once or twice or 3 times a week, or we do outings to other places to shoot, and we just, you know, you get 3 or 4 people in it. Sounds really geeky, because if you look at it from a distance, you know, my girlfriend, she looks out the window and there's 4 of us sitting there in lawn chairs with goggles on, and we're just having the time of our lives, and we just look like video game zombies probably to someone from a distance, but we're interacting, we're talking to each other, chasing each other around through the apple orchards, and, you know, and it's just so much fun. And it's just like being a kid, or it's just like the beginning of discovering drones for the first time, only better. Because I don't know if you've looked through the DJI FPV goggles, the digital feed. Like, when you first started with FPV, it was all analog, so it was like scratchy and lines and very low resolution, high latency, like low latency, but not great resolution. The digital system is like looking at a beautiful, you know, crystal clear image like any other DJI product. It's just almost perfect most of the time, and it's magical. Like, I love porting, actually last night on set, we were doing another job, like with a big job, big machine, but I always bring the FPV stuff along, and we had a bit of time, and some of the guys from the crew were there, and I'm like, check this out, this is the future of drones. And I'd hold it in my hands, and I'd look at our big machine that's 6 feet across that costs $100,000, and I'd say, that's ancient history, this is the future right here. And they'd be like, what, nah, and I'd like, check this out, boom, put the goggles on them, boom, take them for a ride, and they'd lose their minds. People have not had that experience. And then the experience of you're flying this thing FPV, you're looking through the goggles, you turn and you point it at yourself or you point it at the person whose mind you're trying to blow. And you have never had that out-of-body experience in your life until you've seen that. You've never seen your body from another perspective with that kind of clarity to be able to move around it. And there's something about that that's almost religious. And I'm not a religious person, but it feels like you're just seeing yourself from afar. And I just have not, you haven't had that experience until you've flown FPV.
You also do some FPV flying in a manned aircraft. I understand you have your multi-engine rating and instrument flight rules rating, so you're a pretty serious pilot as well. Tell me how that informs how you approach this business, having that kind of procedural knowledge of airspace and just how to go by the book, and why that's important.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's again, sort of an ironic story and an evolutionary story. I've always been interested in aviation and flying and doing exciting things, but I never had a reason to become a pilot. Like, I never wanted to fly for Air Canada or do something like that. And it's, but then drones came along and we started getting pretty serious into that. And back in the beginning, it was kind of weird with regulations and all of that. It was kind of, at first it was sort of open territory. You could do whatever you wanted. And then it got really strict for a few years with the SFOCs. And it actually sounded like, because in the States for a while, you had to have a pilot's license to fly a drone. And I was like, well, I heard that's what's going on down there. So maybe that's what's coming up here. And maybe this is my chance to discover aviation again or re-embrace aviation. So I started, I'll check it out. We were doing our flight training and our ground school training for the drone stuff. And it was actually so in depth that it was almost the same as doing pilot's ground school for a private pilot's license. So I was like, well, I've already done it. And it was the same company that offered it for drones as offered it for real aircraft. So I was like, well, I'll just, what the heck, I'll double down and I'll just do the full meal deal, get my ground school for that. And then once you start doing that, then you're like, well, I might as well start flying, because that's the other side of it. So you start doing flight lessons and hiring an instructor in a plane. And the way I am, I just, once I start something, I tend to just claw my way through it, for better or for worse. And again, evolution, I got my pilot's license and it's like, wow, that's awesome. Now all of a sudden, as that drone guy, I know what's going on in the air above me. I understand air law and airspace and control zones and, what they're talking about up there. Because they always, even back then, they'd make us bring these little airband transceivers to the job sites. And, you're listening. Maybe you got the, back then, you wouldn't even be sure what frequency to be on. And you'd get a frequency and then you'd start hearing stuff. And you're like, I don't even understand what these guys are saying or what it means or any of that stuff. But then you do your PPL, your private pilot's license, and it all starts to come together. It makes sense, and you understand, oh, okay, I understand why they don't want us to go above 400 feet. Because manned aircraft, unless they're taking off or landing, don't generally go below 500 feet. So we're below 4, they're above 5, boom, we don't bump into each other. That's a good idea. All of that's the whole, the big picture comes together. And then again, for me, it was just, I tend to take things to the extremes. So I started flying. I hooked up with a guy we got a 172, so I was able to leverage my way into that. It wasn't really big enough to do anything with. Like, it's a lot of people get planes or start flying, and, they fly somewhere for the day and have a meal and fly back. And for me, that was kind of dull. I wanted to use the aircraft for missions, to actually go places and do things. So I found an aircraft that suited me that happened to be a twin engine. So the first airplane I bought myself personally was a twin, which is pretty ridiculous, but anyway, whatever. So we got a nice little Skymaster Cessna 337. So it's a unique twin too. It's got an engine on the front, it's got an engine on the back, so it's almost like a really, really, really big drone. Like, drones are like a fixed wing drone, if you will, but really big, because drones, they tend to do whatever's the most efficient. They don't really care what they look like. They just, if we got to put a propeller here and a propeller there to make it be the most efficient at what it does. That's what the Cessna 337 is. It's super efficient. Some people say it's ugly. I think it's gorgeous because it's functionally beautiful. It's a very functional aircraft. But if you look at it, you're like, well, I've never seen an airplane that looks like that before, which I love. And you can put a lot of stuff in it and you can go a long way. So we can, now we're starting to use the plane to go places and do drone jobs, ironically. We've been as far as Winnipeg to the west. We just got, well, last summer was actually amazing. We flew to Labrador, did a job in Northern Labrador in the Torngat Mountains. So we flew up there and then flew all the way to St. John's, Newfoundland, and then down through Nova Scotia to New Brunswick and back. And we flew and filmed the whole way. And then this summer, we just got back, or this, actually 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, we just got back from New Brunswick. So we managed, and I don't think we could have done this any other way during COVID times, we managed to get into the Atlantic bubble. We got our paperwork permission to get into the Atlantic bubble, but they'd only let us in for a day to get the shots. We left here at 9 o'clock in the morning, flew to Moncton, New Brunswick. The shoot was luckily very close to the airport. So we had folding bicycles, Inspire package, all packed up in bags that we could take with us on the folding bicycles. We biked a kilometer and a half outside this factory, outside of this factory in Moncton. Got the shot. We were there for 6 hours, loaded up, back in the plane, flew home, got back at 2 o'clock in the morning to our base here in Ontario. That we couldn't have done. We couldn't have done that job. Wouldn't have happened any other way without the aircraft. And the other thing with the plane, it gives, a lot of times we're dealing with, you know, Transport Canada, Nav Canada on a very regular basis, Transport Canada for the sort of extra special stuff like Niagara Falls, restricted airspace approvals, that kind of thing. Sometimes we need to fly higher than the 400 feet. We need special permission for that. Once we start letting them know that I'm a pilot, and not just a pilot, but an instrument rated multi-engine pilot with, you know, I don't have a ton of hours. We're coming up over near 600, you know, which is a drop in the bucket compared to, you know, commercial guys, but it's not, you know, 100 hours either. They have a lot more comfort with that. And we speak the same language. Like, it's, aviation is a language full of acronyms, or they call them aeronyms in aviation. And it just goes on forever. And unless you've learned that language and studied it and continue to study it, it's just like another world, and it's impossible to figure out. And I remember that when I started out with the drones, it was like, I do not know what these people are saying or what they're trying to get across with, you know, you're reading an aviation manual or even the cars, the regulations that we have to follow. And it's like the way it's written, it's like reading legal speak or something. Unless you're a lawyer, you're just not going to get it. And it's a constant work in progress, and we're constantly learning, and I'm constantly, you know, getting beaten down by it, and then, you know, re-embracing it, and, you know, finding new instructors and new teachers, and it's been amazing, and I love it. It's really reawakened my mind. You know, I'm getting a little older, and it's enabled me to really think again and force myself to learn again. And even when you're flying, it's constantly, you're constantly multitasking, you're flying the airplane, you're monitoring your instruments, you're listening in the radio, maybe your first officer, your person who's flying with you is talking to you as well, and you're doing all this stuff at once. And when you first start out, you just can't even fly the plane and talk on the radio. It's almost impossible. Once you do it for a while, you can do three or four things at once well. And it's amazing. I love it.
That's so cool. It's funny because when I started getting into drones, I also had this sort of aviation passion for aviation. And so I took the private pilot's ground school, and then I kind of ran out of money because I just thought, well, the reality is I'm not going to be able to own an aircraft or be able to fly fairly frequently. But it was very good to go through that process. And as you say, the drone industry now has become more regulated, and the course content is really quite similar between the two. We don't have a ton of time left, and I have actually quite a number of questions we haven't got to. So I'm gonna crack a whip here and ask you if you could shorten your answers. Your answers are fantastic, by the way. I mean, I really want to get together and have a coffee or a beer and chat at length. But for the next few minutes, let's just see how many we can get through, and then we'll wrap it up. So I've looked online, and I'm literally astonished at your fleet. You even have such, you know, heavy lifts as the Free Fly Alta 10 ultra heavy lift, 35-pound payload capacity. Could you walk us through maybe one or two highlights from your fleet?
Yeah, well, that machine is sort of exemplary for sure. It came online recently for us. We love FreeFly products because they're one of the, they sort of almost invented this industry. I mean, there was DJI on the one side and Tab for Show at FreeFly on the other. And the Alta X is sort of their newest best, and it's really quite unique in its, you know, one design. If you've seen it, it's actually a quad. Usually these heavy lift machines have, you know, six or usually eight rotors, so you have built-in redundancy. What they did at FreeFly, they really boiled it down to what does this thing really need to do and what's the best way to do it and where are we in the world as far as technology goes? How reliable is this stuff? It's very reliable. We don't need extra stuff, extra spinny bits to make this thing fly. We're going to do it with a quad because that's going to make it more efficient or the most efficient possible. What can we do with propellers? We're going to put the biggest propellers on this thing that we can. So it's got 33-inch diameter propellers, giant propellers. They don't spin that fast. We fly all our other machines. Like, we've been flying cinema camera packages for 5 or 6 years now, and it's, you know, it always sounds like these octos are just, they're just spinning and they're working so hard. They're working at like 80 or 90% just to hold this 20-pound payload that costs $100,000 in the air, which is just terrifying. You hear this machine that's just working and working and working. So we bought the Alta X for a specific mission. We got invited to go to Nepal for 2 months last year to shoot a giant project over there. We needed something that had more power than we needed to fly the payload because we were going to be flying at super high altitude. And I don't think even now anybody's done heavy lift at high altitude before. I couldn't find any references to anybody else doing it. So there was nothing to go by. So I was like, well, you know, we worked with Patrick, who we've spoke of before, who's an aeronautical engineer. He helped us out figuring out lift to weight ratios and all the smart stuff. And, you know, basically it boiled down to take more power, take something, you know. So we had this Alta X that was just coming online at that point. They could lift 35 pounds at sea level. We figured we needed to lift 17 pounds at 5 or 6,000 meters off the ground, not flying from the ground to 5 or 6,000 meters, but starting in the mountains, in the Himalayas. And that's what we came up with. And the thing worked flawlessly. And then since it's become part of our regular fleet, and it's, we use it whenever we can. You fire this thing up and it's just like a normal drone. This thing, whoop, 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 whoop. And you look at it and it just looks like a diesel truck that's empty and not even working. Like, it's just a diesel truck idling. Bub, 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 bub. And it's just, yeah, I get it. I get how they can do this with a quad and have it safe, because it's not even breaking a sweat to do the stuff that our other machines have to just work so hard to do. And I love it. We're just so confident in that machine, and we just love it. We have other machines. I mean, the FreeFlies sort of become our main stable of heavy lift machines. You know, up until 2 or 3 years ago, we were building all our heavy lift machines ourselves, coaxials and big octos and stuff. And at first I was building them, and then we've offloaded that to Patrick, our aeronautical engineer, maintenance engineer at the facility. And it just wasn't worthwhile. It's better to now to get something that's pre-engineered. Maybe we modify certain things, but the FreeFly stuff is so good, and it's so made for the cinema world right off the bat. Like, just as an example, the Alta just had a battery issue with 3 out of 12 of our batteries or something. I emailed them yesterday. Someone got back to me in 30 minutes, and they've organized to FedEx us, you know, replacement batteries immediately, because they understand that we're in film. Maybe I've got to shoot tomorrow. Maybe I need this thing. It's got to work. We got to have the stuff, as opposed to DJI, which I'd have to fight with for weeks or months to get anything. Yeah, they stand behind their stuff, but you never get a real person on the phone. You can't talk to anybody. It's a different world. So, yeah, we love FreeFly for sure.
Technology is always leapfrogging, whether we're talking about cameras or drones. So we're at a stage now where we can get super stable, beautiful shots in 4K, 6K, even 8K. Do you see drones changing much in the future, or do you think we've kind of hit a plateau here, at least in terms of what is required for the kind of work you do?
Yeah, I mean, for the cinema world, I think it's always going to keep changing. I mean, we've seen some fun stuff come on the horizon and we're just starting to use some of this stuff ourselves. The parachute systems, So we're starting to use these automatically deployed parachute systems, because up until recently, we weren't allowed to fly over the public. You know, so it was always this thing, you know, everybody wants this shot. They want me to go to downtown Toronto, and they want me to fly from one side of town to the other, over top of the buildings, looking down, or, you know, we still have to keep the thing in line of sight. That's still one of our main rules. Now, if we strap this Indemnus parachute system onto either an Inspire or the little Mavics, but those some of the little TV jobs that we get are still in the Mavic world, we're legally allowed to fly right over the public, because, you know, even if this drone stops working, falls out of the sky, it's barrel triggered. It's got a little barometer in there. It knows that it's free falling, and it goes, oh, I'm not supposed to free fall. I'm going to hurt somebody. Poof, parachute comes out and it starts squawking. Burp, 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 get out of the way. And it parachutes down and lands on the street and breaks still, but you don't hurt anybody or you don't kill anybody. That's for sure. And that's amazing. Like, they've figured out this ability to keep everybody safe on the ground below the drone while you're operating around this stuff, and I can still get my shot.
I've seen the Indemnus at a drone show. I've never worked with it, but I'm curious, when you mentioned the sort of the barometric pressure change triggering the chute to pop, is there a manual way of triggering it? Because I'm thinking, oh, well, then I guess you couldn't use that on your FPV stuff if you're diving off a building.
Correct. Yeah, it wouldn't work. Well, they don't make them. They're drone specific. They do have a manual trigger for them as well.
Gotcha. Listen, we're going to have to wrap it up in a second, but I want to close with, if someone came to you who really wanted to improve either their piloting skills or their cinematography skills, what might be the couple of top takeaways that you would try to offer to that person?
I mean, as far as cinematography skills, I'd just say go back to you know, reading cinematography books, learning about the frame, learning about, you know, how to compose a shot. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time in that world. Take up still photography, you know, learn the rule of thirds for composing, learn about putting, you know, someone's walking across a frame this way, put more headroom on the front of them than on the back of them. Just simple stuff. But it's so applicable to motion when you get into video, flying a drone, framing a shot. If you're just putting everything in the middle of your shot all the time or doing everything really static, it's gonna be relatively boring, and it's not gonna work, and you're not gonna impress anybody. As far as learning how to fly, just fly. Get something, you know, don't get something too cheap, you know, but get, you know, a lower end DJI product, you know, even like a little Mavic, what is it, the Mavic Mini now, which is under 250 grams, so you can fly it legally anywhere, because it's 250 grams is the cutoff for when it becomes more regulated. So you get one of these things, it's still got a 2.7K camera on it, you can fly it almost anywhere, it's got all the automation, and that's a great way to learn. Start flying that thing and just fly it every day if you can. You know, if you have a place you can fly every day. I'm lucky with the FPV. I'll go out in a few hours. I'm gonna be out in the yard flying around FPV every single day. That's how you get good.
That's awesome. I am super impressed with what you guys do. I've really enjoyed chatting, and I hope our listeners will check out the story and as well the Drone Boys Cinema demo reel, which we'll have on the website. So Tom Comet, chief pilot and founder of Drone Boy Cinema, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the interview. It's been a pleasure.
Wow. That went by in like a flash. And Tom Comet was great. Seriously, could the guy have a more perfect name for someone who is both a drone pilot and a private pilot? Comet? Get out of here. Tom's website, by the way, is droneboy.com. I would encourage you to check out their demo reel as well as the Our Work tab, which contains some really awesome demo reels. These guys are serious, and they are also seriously inspiring. I told Tom I would have to come out and visit sometime, since he has a flying field right beside his house, and hopefully I'll get a chance to shoot a video then as well. I'm Scott Simme, senior editor of DroneDJ.com, and this has been The Buzz.